Welcome to Federal News Network's Data and Application Security Series, brought to you by Four Incorporated. Here's today's moderator, Justin Doubleday.
Welcome and thanks for joining us. My guest today is Grant Dasher, Architecture Branch Chief in the Office of the Technical Director for Cybersecurity at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. Hey, Grant, thank you for taking the time today.
Yeah, happy to be here, Justin.
And so I wanted to start off by asking you just to explain your role at CISA, because I know you do a number of different initiatives you have your hand in. I'd love to learn more about what you've been up to, what you're working on going forward.
Yeah, sure. So I work in the Office of the Technical Director for Cybersecurity. So my boss is the Technical Director, Chris Patera. Our office is responsible for a number of things, but perhaps our sort of core role is to try and help integrate and support the variety of different programs in the cybersecurity division at CISA that support risk reduction for critical infrastructure and cybersecurity mission for federal civilian agencies. And so I do a lot of things. I wear a lot of hats under that. My team is the architecture team. So that is, you know, primarily concerned with internal CISA programs and initiatives, things like the CDM program, the CADS program, which was formerly the NCPS program, and how we can make those programs integrate and provide the ability to, you know, support CISA's mission. But it also includes a broader role working with other parts of our organization, you know, that are engaging with external stakeholders, whether inside the government, for example, work that we do with other civilian agencies, or also more broadly in critical infrastructure with the IT sector, with other sectors that CISA engages with as part of its critical infrastructure mission. So it's a pretty wide-ranging role, which makes it exciting, but primarily focused again on how we can use technology to reduce cybersecurity risk to critical infrastructure and civilian government systems.
It's great too, because it sounds as if, you know, you're taking a step back and looking at how all these different pieces fit together and, you know, work for a number of different, I guess, I don't know if you call them customers, but the folks who are using these different services and programs, right? So it must be pretty meaningful. And one thing that I wanted to discuss was, you know, federal agencies are moving toward this zero trust mandate, and they're going to use to some extent, maybe some more than others, CISA programs, initiatives, some of the ones that you mentioned and others to get there or to continually get there, I guess. Mm-hmm. From your role, from your perspective with these different programs and initiatives, how is CISA helping agencies really get to that architecture and then continually improve on that zero trust architecture?
Yeah, sure. So I think in a number of different ways. So as you know, CISA has a number of different programs that we work with federal agencies on to help them, you know, reduce cybersecurity risk. So there's some, you know, confined examples, such as, for example, we've recently, you know, deployed our Protective DNS program, which has been going for a while, to all civilian agencies. And we've been, you know, working to integrate that in a way that is aligned with zero trust principles, for example, around encryption of DNS and things like that. So there are, you know, a number of efforts in that space. The CDM program is obviously a huge part of this. Really, ever since after the SolarWinds incident, there's been a major investment in the CDM program and EDR, which is key piece of the zero trust transition. And so we've been working with agencies to both support the deployment of EDR in those agencies, but also make sure that our operational teams and the operational teams at the agencies, you know, have the data that they need to hunt for advanced nation state adversaries that are trying to access government data. There's also a broader effort with the CDM program to figure out how we can best support zero trust transition. Are there other, you know, services that we need to offer, for example, targeted at small agencies? We've done some interesting things there with identity, and also, you know, with the larger agencies, how do we make sure that, again, we're providing an integrated data view to the departments in those large agencies so they can sort of manage what's going on inside of their estates, but also we can manage it at the government scale. So there's a lot going on there. We'll spend some time later talking about SCUBA and some of the other programs that we have, but we think those are also supportive of zero trust. So there's a lot in that space.
And another thing that we've been exploring as part of this series is just how agencies are trying to protect their data, another pillar under the zero trust, strategy, of course, under CISA's zero trust architecture capability model. Do you have any thoughts just on, where that specific effort is at, understanding that it's all kind of interconnected, but specifically looking at protecting data sets. I think you mentioned encryption earlier.
Right.
Just where that's at today here in 2024.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, candidly, right, data is one of the areas of the zero trust transition that probably has gotten a little bit less attention, but that's not because it's not critically important. We do think it's critically important. And in fact, in my role internally to CISA, a good chunk of what our team does is, you know, work on understanding CISA's internal data holdings and how to make sure we have a clear understanding and governance over that, how to make sure we're applying, you know, strong security controls to the data that we steward and make sure that we understand it and connect it between different parts of the mission so that they can make effective use of it. And other agencies, you know, have the same challenges, right? And are trying to do the same thing. I mean, I think as we discussed in the Zero Trust Maturity Model, there is a need to focus on the protection of data and on, you know, technology that supports that. There's a really importance around data governance and metadata management. I think it's very hard to manage risk to data if you don't have at least some understanding of the data that you have, you know, maybe at a very granular level in some sophisticated cases where you've developed, you know, detailed granular schemas and things like that, but at least at a higher level, understanding what you have, how it connects between different systems that you have. I think that understanding is fundamental to securing that data. And I think once, you know, organizations have developed that, and again, the FSAT is a big place and different agencies are in different places from a maturity point of view, but building on that understanding, right, there are approaches that you can take to secure the data that we discuss in, for example, in the maturity model. You know, encryption is an obvious example. It protects against certain kinds of threats. It's not a panacea. Fine-grained access control, governance of identity provides governance of access to data. It's all interconnected, but we do think that it's a critical piece of the overall puzzle, and one that, you know, as Matt House, who is the CDM program manager, has said, will be, you know, a continued area of focus for us in the future.
That's a great overview and explanation there. Hopefully some valuable takeaways for our audience. And one of the other things that we've been discussing is you've got these different applications that are generating data, managing data, analyzing data, so on and so forth. They all have to, oftentimes they have to connect in some way, and APIs is one way to do that. Is that something that you think about in your role as API security? Is that something that's becoming a challenge or, you know, an issue that you have to address?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an issue. Like I said, there's strong mission demand for integrating data sets and integrating systems across the enterprise. I mean, there are, especially in our mission at CISA, but this is not unique to CISA. This is true all over the government. There are strong demands for those kinds of integrations. And in order to make that work, you need secure ways for different systems in the organization to talk to each other. And APIs are those ways, right? So the old days of a single master enterprise service bus across the entire organization are not really, you know, it's not, that model doesn't really scale to the level of challenges and problems that we have these days. So you have these, you know, API integrations where you need to share data. And yes, there's a lot of either within an organization or even, you know, with the outside world, for example, partners or even, you know, third-party organizations in some cases. And obviously the security of those APIs is critical. You know, I think there are a variety of approaches depending on the sort of broader construct that one is taking. But again, I think it all comes back down to identity, not identity of people. We call them non-person entities here in the government. But workloads is another term that's widely used for this in the private sector. And so providing identities to workloads, providing secure and strong credentials for those things authenticating to each other, making sure you know, for example, if you're using API keys, making sure that they are rotated and stored in a secure manner, those are critical things in order for this all to work. There's a natural tension here between enabling access to support the mission and providing security. And our point of view at CISA is we can't let security become like something that prevents the government from delivering services to its constituents. But we have to protect the data. And so finding how to triangulate that is really the crux of data protection and all of these issues. I mean, it's non-trivial, right? And there's no one-size-fits-all solution. But we do think that there are best practices, for example, for managing credentials, how you secure them, how you control them, how you authenticate them, how you provide protection for APIs within the organization and externally. We've written about this in, some of the publications that we've done, and there's a lot of stuff that's come out of NIST, for example, that's also interesting and useful. I would say, yes, we think API security is an area that will continue to get more and more important. And, especially as we move away from flat networks and introduce more segmentation, the technical elements get a little more complicated, but are still very important.
And again, that's Grant Dasher, the Architecture Branch Chief within the Office of the Technical Director at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. We're going to take a short break here, but we'll pick up the conversation with Grant when we come back. I'm Justin Doubleday, and you're listening to the Data and Application Security series on Federal News Network.
Securing your agency's data is paramount. IBM API Connect, integrated with Noname Security, offers a tailored solution for federal agencies. Protecting sensitive data isn't just about safeguarding. It's about ensuring availability, recovery, and reliability to support mission-critical operations. As an IBM Platinum Partner, 4 Inc. trusts IBM API Connect, integrated with Noname Security, for unmatched speed and efficiency in securing, accessing, and ensuring the integrity of vital data. Visit FOURINC.com.
Welcome back to the Data and Application Security series on Federal News Network. I'm your host, Justin Doubleday, and I'm speaking with the Architecture Branch Chief within the Office of the Technical Director at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, Grant Dasher. And Grant, before the break, we were discussing zero trust architectures and data security. One thing we haven't touched on yet is the migration to the cloud. Of course, that's undergirding a lot of this conversation here. When the federal zero trust strategy first came out, there was this acknowledgement that the cloud is necessary to adopt a zero trust architecture. Now, after some recent incidents, we're again having more of a conversation about what are the security risks around cloud and cloud service providers. So, what are your observations on what agencies should do to stay secure as they migrate infrastructure, workloads, and applications into the cloud?
Yeah, so I think the cloud conversation sometimes gets a little bit reduced into cloud good, cloud bad. I don't think that's a helpful frame to look at things through. CISA strongly supports agencies migrating workloads to the cloud. In fact, we're doing that internally across a number of our workloads, including some very sensitive workloads. We think on net, it provides a foundation that is, useful and secure and solves certain, operational and cost challenges in some cases. Allows you to scale out workloads and do big data processing that just wouldn't be affordable to do on-prem, for example. I think that, the cloud conversation is a couple pieces, right? One is a conversation around, and that CISA is having with IT sector and with the CSPs around, how do we put more rigor behind this notion of a shared responsibility model? And what really are the obligations of a CSP? Obviously, they have obligations to keep their core infrastructure secure. And we've seen situations where that hasn't happened and that's had significant impact. But we do think that, there is more to it than that. And we need to make sure that, providers are providing software with secure defaults, for example. It's a key part of our secure by design message, that it's not just shifting risk on organizations to manage some insane amount of complexity that no organization with a budget of a government agency, even the large ones, will be able to, manage. Like the economic curve doesn't work. And so we're having, one conversation there about, like, how do we, find an operating model that provides that security, and what are the appropriate, responsibilities for a provider under the shared responsibility model. The second part of the conversation is, everyone agrees that there are things for which an organization that is adopting cloud services is still going to be responsible for, configuring those services, using them, and what those things are is different, for example, in a SaaS application versus in IaaS, where you're running your own infrastructure, and understandably, you have more obligations there. And we do think, there is a responsibility for CISA to do things in that space in terms of shaping, how agencies are consuming cloud services, leveraging the operational learnings that we've built up over, frankly, over a decade of doing incident response in civilian government networks. And so the SCUBA project is an example of something that's grown out of that, where we've said, hey, we've been doing these IRs in the cloud, and we've seen these things before, and we should take that threat-informed perspective and, you know, put forward specific recommendations in terms of how you should configure these products and, importantly, tools to help agencies make sure that they are implementing those recommendations in the way that we expect so that we can have confidence that we're actually realizing those security benefits of those configurations. So, you know, we think that there is a lot of value in the cloud in terms of modernizing approach to security, creating, for example, a more secure fundamental identity root of trust. But obviously by consolidating, you know, a lot of data into like a sort of a more shared scope by one organization, you are introducing some risks. I would argue that those risks also exist on-prem just in the form of, for example, software supply chain threats. So it's not like that risk isn't there, but it is a little different and it is important to manage it accordingly. So I think that, yeah, I think that would a slightly long-winded answer of saying, you know, CISA is very much supportive of, you know, secure cloud adoption. We think that there is a very important conversation with the providers in terms of the shared responsibility model, in terms of transparency about their vulnerabilities and operational practices. And then there's also an important conversation about standardizing the way in which cloud services are used by the FSEB a little bit more and taking some of the learnings from real incidents and applying those in terms of hardening our defenses.
Yeah, that's a fantastic way to just explain that challenge. I really appreciate that. And, you know, on your last point, you mentioned the SCUBA project, Secure Cloud Business Applications, SCUBA, CISA project that helps organizations secure their business cloud applications, primarily tailored to federal agencies, but I think anyone can use them, right? How is this project, I guess, what has this project put out so far in terms of guidance and so forth, and how are you seeing it being used?
So I think we're very proud of this project. So this project grew out of the SolarWinds incident and the incident response work that we did after the SolarWinds incident, where we went in and sort of saw, you know, how people had pivoted from compromising on-prem Active Directories to compromising cloud environments. And so as part of the ARPA law that was signed in at the beginning of the Biden administration, CISA was funded to develop a set of configuration baselines and guidance standards for cloud business applications. And to date, we've released a finalized baseline for Microsoft 365, in particular focused on the Office applications and Entra ID. And we have currently in comment and sort of testing with agencies a Google Workspace baseline that complements that. These applications are huge, right? They're used widely in the civilian government, but also outside of that in critical infrastructure. And we've seen quite a bit of adoption, you know, measured by, for example, GitHub downloads or feedback, or frankly, even just reading Reddit commentary. I mean, you can see people talking about using these tools in sectors all over the economy, which is something that we're actually pretty proud of. And so what we did is we developed some high-level guidance, for example, on a general approach to architecture. That is the technical reference architecture for SCUBA. And then some guidance specific to identity, you know, migration from on-prem to cloud identity systems. There's a document, the hybrid identity solutions architecture, which covers that. But really the molten core of this are the security baselines, which are configuration baselines for Microsoft 365 products like Entra ID, Defender, Exchange, SharePoint, OneDrive, Power Platform, and Google Workspace, similarly for different Google Workspace core products. And what's a little bit novel is that in addition to creating a set of baselines, we actually wrote a tool, the Scuba Gear tool or the Scuba Goggles tool. Scuba Gear is for Microsoft, Scuba Goggles is for Google. And what these tools do is they connect to an organization's tenant and then actually score the compliance of that tenant with the baselines based on our very prescriptive definition of what we meant by the baselines. And they'll generate a report to say, hey, you know, here's where you're different from the standard. And we've gotten strong feedback from agencies that is very useful. It's useful for a number of reasons. First of all, it helps them find settings they didn't know existed. So there's some setting that Microsoft introduced that an agency wasn't aware of, and they see that we say this is useful, so they can see they're not using it. Second of all, it allows in the larger agencies, the departmental folks to monitor the risk and things going on in these components. Some of these agencies have multiple tenants spread across the agency, and so it provides a way for them to track, you know, and manage risk inside their states. Third, it provides visibility to CISA in terms of how are agencies measuring against our standards, where are the gaps, where are opportunities to work with agencies to improve. And also it just finds bugs. I mean, we've seen situations where agencies thought they had implemented a certain control and our assessment says no. In some cases, it's because the assessment tool is wrong and we found and fixed bugs like that. But in other cases, it's because like the agency thought they'd implemented it, but actually they hadn't. And when you dig into the details, you know, we find and help correct errors. And so we think that's a useful step forward. We've had, you know, over 11,000 downloads from GitHub and PowerShell Gallery. We have, you know, over 1,400 stars on GitHub. And like I said, the feedback has been generally quite positive, not just from agencies, but also from other organizations, MSPs and other, you know, organizations in critical infrastructure and even outside of critical infrastructure. And we think it's, you know, it's a useful way of providing a threat-informed perspective on these critical services.
Yeah, the tool seems like such a powerful capability where in a lot of cases, agencies, organizations are often just getting guidance that tells them, you know, thou shall or thou should, but then there's no real way of checking until after the fact. And then you're like, oh, well, maybe we should have had that turned on, but there was an incident. So I don't know. It seems good. What is CISA learning from the data maybe that it's getting from those tools just about cloud, business cloud configurations and the like?
Yeah. I mean, so at a high level, right, it's helped us, you know, descend from a sort of macro understanding to a micro understanding of like, where are the pain points, where are the challenges in terms of turning on or off certain functionality. It certainly helped us refine the baselines. We've been able to make changes to the baselines based on, you know, agencies saying, hey, I can't actually do it this way because of this very legitimate reason. And so we can make, you know, changes there. It also just gives us sort of an overall measure of risk, right? Like where are we carrying risk at a government-wide level? And, you know, what are areas that we need to invest in order to reduce that longer term? So it's, you know, it's powerful in much the same way that the CDM dashboard is powerful, providing similar kinds of visibility, but in a different context.
All right. And, you know, this has been a very fulsome conversation. We've covered a lot of ground. You know, I love just ending it for folks like yourself. What are you tracking over the next 6 months? Maybe it's something you're working on. Maybe it's something you have a hand in, or maybe it's just something you're watching that you think is particularly important.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, the broader conversation between, you know, the government and the cloud providers is clearly heated up in the last couple of months. And we expect, you know, that conversation to continue. And so I'm, you know, engaged in that conversation with other partners at CISA and in other parts of the US government as we again try and advance the national cybersecurity strategy strategic goal, making sure that, you know, the risk in cybersecurity is managed by those actors that are best able to accommodate it. And we think, you know, CSPs are an example of that, as is the government. And so that's, you know, an area that is continually important. I also think, you know, the evolution and maturation of you know, programs in the government turn very slowly, as we all know, but the evolution and maturation of things like CDM, things like CADs, to bring a more sort of integrated perspective on cybersecurity risk reduction in the civilian government is something that I think, you know, there will be more there as those programs continue to sort of turn and, you know, advance those goals in new and exciting ways. So there's a lot going on as always. We're, you know, facing a threat environment that is, you know, scary in some respects, but also exciting. And I think we're trying to meet the moment and tackle those risks.
All right. Well, Grant Dasher is Architecture Branch Chief at the Office of the Technical Director for Cybersecurity at CISA. Grant, really appreciate the time and fielding all these questions.
Yeah, happy to be here, Justin, and look forward to chatting again in the future.
Thank you for listening to Federal News Network's Data and Application Security Series, brought to you by 4 Incorporated.